Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
They could do that.
Yeah.
You know what's funny? Before I even begin, I have to. I'm going to do the Gooder promo here. But what?
It's on.
It's back.
The volume is on.
Yeah.
Well, hit mute, kid. Technology guy.
It is muted.
Is it playing through the TV behind?
Oh, it is playing through the TV, so it's not me.
Why would it be playing through there?
No. Hey, guy. Mr. Controller.
Be great to have a guy who knows how to do a podcast.
Did it stop?
Yes.
It did. Did everything else work?
Yeah.
How does that crow taste?
Let me see if
I'm going to crack the door open.
The theme's still going to work. You can crack the door. So speaking of, I was to say before I start with the Gooder promo, which I'm going to do here shortly. You remember that cheesy little funky beat I did last week? YouTube flagged me for it.
Really?
They're like, yeah. They're like, no, you can't use that. It came with the software. It was just a stupid little software thing, a little beat. And they're like, nope, can't make money off of this. Huh. I'm like, well, thank God I don't make any money.
You owe me.
Yeah, before we begin, hey, YouTube, this is free.
Wow.
It's really steep. Cheesy. Paul, you're going to hate it already. Yeah. Hey, you guys, before we begin, it's time to officially kick off the summer. No, really, it's the first day of summer. And as you know, we here at Packville are only endorsed products and services that we truly believe in. We use them, we enjoy their services, and so on. And with this in mind, Packville's Gooder Summer has begun. We have been given a specific amount of discount codes, everybody, just for you guys, friends of the Packville, for 15% off your purchase. If you take into account the Gooders that are already the most affordable quality eyewear out there, that makes this even better of a deal. Use the code PACKFILLER15. That's 15, not F. Yeah. To get your discount on non-slip polarized stylish shades for both on and off the bike, make sure to use it wisely, which means, in other words, make sure to grab a couple pair with the discount. So the PACKFILLER's Gooder Summer is officially underway, and I have 12 seconds left in my non-copyrighted music background bed.
Are we just going to sit here in it, or like
there?
Okay.
Oh, all right.
I feel so much better. Let's do this with a theme that was written just specifically for this show. And I have to say, from a person I can't remember, and I owe that person a gigantic apology. And if you were listening to the show still, and you're not really bitter about things, we should talk.
Yeah,
you could do better than the Gooder thing.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, as I said previously, summer is here. We have an option to choose our perspective on how things are going to go this summer. We can think, hey, the Tour de France is right around the corner and the weather is getting better, right? That's option one. Or option two, we can think, shit, the Tour de Suisse was barely completed due to a massive COVID positives and the weather is absolutely shit around the world. We're all going to die or drown in a matter of weeks. Bring on the locusts. So that's, I think, basically what we're staring down the barrel of. Option A or option B. We're trying to stick with option one around here as the home of the two-wheeled lifestyle. Welcome to the Packfiller Podcast, live from the Rim Break Bar. I'm Pat Bulger. We have a full panel tonight with a special returning guest. Aww. Welcome, all. You guys all have to answer, of course, the question upon your introduction, which is, I'm not going to sneeze.
Yes, you are. Look at the light.
What actor or musician did you have a huge crush on as a teenager? What actor and musician did you have a gigantic crush on as a teenager? So first and foremost, he's very likely the reason why your local bike shop is out of rim brake pads, Mr. Paul Main.
I do store up on those.
Yeah. How are you, man?
Doing all right. Yeah.
Who did you have a crush on? Fess
up. I can't remember her name, and it was actually kind of late teens, but the lead singer from Missing Persons.
Do you hear me?
Yeah. And then I found out she's this tall.
You know, oh, really?
Yeah, she's pretty short.
So you have a height thing? Yeah, my wife has a height thing.
I have a height thing.
My wife always thought Chris Isaac was hot, but she says he's too short.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good to know.
Yeah.
So the lead singer Missing Persons.
Yeah.
Was it because of what she wore on stage? She wore very little on stage.
Well, not to be disgusting. Just the videos and stuff was my first connection with that. So, yeah, I thought she was just kind of quirky enough.
I get them in Berlin mixed up all the time.
The Icelandic singer.
Bjork.
Yeah.
Those two.
Okay.
Bjork, maybe, now that I think about it, may lean towards that a little
more
bit.
Bjork.
Yeah.
More Bjork.
But that again,
the Swedish chef from the Muppets.
Yeah. Bjork. Oh, wait, we might be slammed on that one.
Yeah, we're going to get in trouble. Yeah. Second of all, he's officially the person who has traveled the farthest to appear live here in the Rim Break Bar. Our old friend, teammate, and legend, Mr. Brent Soderberg. How are you, man?
Yeah, great. Great to be back.
When was the last time you were here?
It was back in, I think, December of 2019, just before
COVID.
Just before COVID.
Oh,
so,
shit. Yeah. Oh, man. Okay. So, I could go and delve into the history of our lives together, but people need to delve into the history of the show. But who did you have a crush on, movie or music?
I could go with music. Probably someone like Belinda Carlisle, someone like
Belinda
that.
Good choice. I was, the Go-Go's. Big fan of Belinda Carlisle. I agree. I'm going to confess that I kind of had a little fantasy that she was my wife. I'm really divulging way too much.
Yeah.
Third off, he destroyed the triple-digit demon, Mr. Jackson Bolger. How are you, man?
Doing well. Let's see.
Who don't get the crushy crush on, Jackson. Yeah, and this is going to be fairly recent because you were a teenager, what, a week ago?
Yep, exactly. Only 3 weeks ago. Let's see. It's a tough one because I don't think about it all that often.
Is it a Disney star, Jackson?
No, it's tough because it's like when I was younger, I don't like remember who it was. I always wanted to I had a crush in terms of I wanted to be. I always wanted to be Joe Jonas when I was younger.
Okay.
Yeah. But I don't know if I had...
Which one's Joe?
Joe's the singer one. Nick's the most talented, as we all know.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah, okay.
I always wanted to be Joe.
You want to be Joe.
Yeah, I don't know if I specifically remember the crushes that I had, but...
So you're going to bail on the whole crush thing? It wasn't Amanda from the Amanda show. It wasn't Britney... No, not Britney Spears. It wasn't Hannah Montana. It wasn't
Miley Cyrus. Miley Cyrus. No, like I said, really? It's tough to remember.
Really?
Yeah.
You're just saying that because I'm in the room, right?
Yep, that's the only reason.
You just be creepy because he didn't have any posters in his room. Huh. My father gave me that classic poster of all the naked. I'm going to get in trouble for objection. But of all the naked women at the start of the bike race, did you guys ever see that one? I think it was on a Queen album. My dad gave it to me in high school to put in my room.
What an odd gift from a father.
Yeah, it's just like going, hey, I hear you like cocaine. Here's crack.
It's pretty much going,
hey, here's your sexual awakening.
Yeah. I did give you a bottle of Jergens.
Just burn it off, boy.
Here you go.
So, there we go. Me, I'm the guy who ironically couldn't speak for about 2 hours on Saturday, which is ironic because usually we all know I have nothing but the ability to speak. I'm Pat Bolger, and I had a crush on originally Farrah Fawcett, but that was not grade school years. That was not high school. That was not teenager. I had that Farrah Fawcett poster, but then I did shift to Paulina Poroskova.
Okay,
She was she was in one movie called Her Alibi with Tom Selleck, And maybe that's why I have a mustache today. That married. Paul, you know, come back to me. Rick Ocasek. Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
And they
yeah.
They were married forever.
Yeah, and she's yeah. all over Twitter nowadays. Yeah. Just because somebody called said, like, quit trying to be sexy because you're old. And it's like, Paulina's like, fuck you. And she looks dynamite. Yeah. She looks amazing. And we can all probably agree, except for Jackson, that I intentionally didn't say an athlete because we all would have said on the count of three, one, two, three, Rebecca Twigg.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. We all, every junior cyclist loved Rebecca Twigg back in those days. She
except I was more her age.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry. Really?
Yeah.
Sorry.
I have a signed autograph of hers. I think the first bike race I ever did, she really? Was there like signing autographs. So
they're in Seattle.
Hold on to that.
Seattle. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, somebody's going to immediately comment on YouTube about, oh, she's in Seattle now.
Yeah.
Anyway. So welcome, Brent. What brings you to the Northwest, man? What brings you back?
Yeah, coming out to see some family. When my I had a nephew that got married, so came out to visit my family and sister and brought the bike out. And that's a little side story with that one. But
Wait, what?
Yeah.
So, yeah. I texted Paul and said, hey, you want to go for a ride? And
I said, thumbs up.
So
you've always been good about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And originally I wanted to do the Grand Fondo with you guys, but yeah, I just couldn't work out the logistics with that. But after some flight delays, got here Friday and put my bike together, and the DI2 did not
shit.
Work.
Oh, just, no.
I listened to that Murray Jameson
interview
you did like about a month ago, and that's exactly what happened to me.
No.
Yeah, it would not work. You know, I tried everything. So I was texting Paul saying, I don't think this ride's going to happen. And I brought it up to one of the bike shops up in the north end of Spokane, and they helped me out, got it put back together. It was a bad wire.
Which one was it?
North Division. And I
there we go.
A couple of friends there. I actually ran into someone, another friend of the podcast, when I was dropping off the bike.
Really?
Roger.
Well, drink.
Shit.
You got to drink, Brent.
Yeah. I don't think he likes the beer I gave him because he told me when he walked in, I'm not a big fan of IPAs. But
did he give you an IPA?
No, it might be.
That's pretty good.
There's the Bernadus, we can always
juice him up.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, this is my side of the story.
Okay.
So he texts me, and I'm all like old jazz, and I'm telling my wife I'm getting all, you know, like, I've seen Brent, and we're kind of the same style riders.
Honey, you gotta let me go this time.
No, yeah, I was clear anyway, but, you know.
Yeah.
And you guys were off doing your little silly little
Take thing. It easy.
And so, mine was free. How much did you guys...
We'll get to that.
All right. So, I give him a thumbs up and everything. And right before I go to see my in-laws, my wife and I are visiting the in-laws, we kind of set a time and everything. I said, great, see you then. You know, he actually, being a computer guy, sent me like, this is my map. He did my map?
Map, right? Ride with GPS.
Ride with GPS.
Yeah. So he sent me that, and I like downloaded it. I said, what a geek. That was under my breath. And then
I could feel my phone exploding. You were like, I don't understand.
No, I did, because it's right in front of me.
It's not mechanical.
He made it easy for me. I was like, oh, hey, that's cool. Yeah. I didn't know that you could do that.
I made him a coffee shop by his house.
Yeah. It was perfect. So anyway, I could feel my phone exploding in my pocket. And that's one thing you don't do.
Personal problem.
Yeah. It was just like buzz. And I'm like, oh, who is that? Hopefully it's not Brent, because there's other people. I don't know if it's you guys or there's another group of guys, ex-bike racers of mine, that always get on a kick. And so I said I had to go to the bathroom, and I look and I start reading. I'm like, oh, shit. This is the wrong person to bail on a ride.
Because of
mechanical. I said, on Tuesday, issue. You know I'm going to bring this up. And so, but he was able to get it fixed. And so I was like, yeah, because I was looking forward to the ride.
Yeah.
And he said, hey, on the ride, he goes, I think there's a segment we can get a KOM.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's, you had that planned out that far
he did.
In advance? Wow.
I didn't even know where it was.
I looked at the segments on this route, and he already had one of them. So I said, let's go for another one.
And?
Yeah, we got it. He had it for a while. But
I had it until he uploaded his route.
And the funny thing is, I wrote it backwards the next day.
That's not the one I wanted. But anyways, and I looked at
it where it was marked. Mm-hmm. We coasted for
you
about.
You could have had it by another 10 seconds.
I know it easy.
We coasted like the last part.
Yeah.
Racing's dead, Jackson. Racing's dead. They're going to bust our balls for actually paying an entry fee. But they got a Strava segment.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well,
did you guys get any better Strava segments?
They'll go out and probably beat it.
Yeah.
Did you look?
We got a third on one, yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
You're such a dick. Britt, you've been riding a ton, man. I stalk you through Strava and your social media and stuff like that. So do you feel comfortable enough telling us the where you ride, the where you live and where you ride? Don't give the address
because I won't give my address, but I live up kind of in Northwest Connecticut. I've been out there for like 20 years. There's a lot of great riding there. You kind of easily get out into the countryside and a lot of winding roads.
Tell me about the good things about riding. You know, you were here, you grew up around the Northwest and things like that, and I'm personally biased, obviously, so I'm going to, go, well, it's nowhere better. But seeing, you know, a lot of the, you know, especially the gravel scene and things like that, which are gigantic up there, but what are the good things and what makes it special about where you live and where you ride?
Yeah, I mean, I think where I live now, I miss definitely the big kind of mountains out here, but there's a lot of hills. There's so many just winding roads with very little traffic, little dirt road connectors. I'm a couple hour drive to get up to Vermont from where I live. And so, you know, Western Massachusetts, Vermont, the areas where I live are really nice for just great back roads. So
now gravel seems to be, it correct me if I'm wrong, much more in its prime as farther you go east than it is here almost.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the big scenes are like kind of the Midwest. Yeah. It's just a little bit different. Vermont, I think, has its own kind of unique style. In some of those roads out there, or the gravel roads are like more pristine than the than the tarmac. So it's just it's really nice. A lot of hills though. So
yeah. We all want to know what the good things are, but we also want to know what the bad things are. You know, tell me about, you know, the cars versus bike scenarios, the do you get people rolling coal on you and stuff like that. We all want to believe that there's a Mecca somewhere, that there's this beautiful place where you can ride and everybody's like, hi,
it is,
would you
nice.
Like an apple pie as you're riding by instead of throwing a hamburger at you. Like, yeah, that story so I tell funny. You Jackson. Yeah,
yeah, we don't have as many big trucks out there as I noticed we have around here. But you get the people rolling coal every now and then, but not too often. More so you have to look out for the weekend New Yorkers are up in the hills in their BMWs that don't like you being on the road,
taking pictures as they're driving by you and shit like that. Tell me about what are there things you're training for, events, challenges, anything like that you're kind of shifting towards or leaning towards?
This kind of goes back to 2019 when I was here. My big goal was to go over and do the Rift Iceland. And that's been put off for 2 years, so I'm actually going back over in about 4 weeks to do that. Wow. So that's
no shit. That's really
super cool.
So that's kind of been motivating to keep me riding more this year. I definitely got more miles in this year than last year. So
okay, tell the unexperienced listener, which is me, everything about this, the Rift, and what this is.
Yeah, so the Rift has been going on a few years. I think if you follow Instagram and social media of some of the gravel riders, you've seen people like, I think Pete Stetner went over there last year and did it, and it's 125 mile, 200 kilometer ride around a volcano basically in southern Iceland.
It
looks pretty rough. Some of the gravel might be a little more harsh than what I'm used to, so that's probably the one thing that's worrying me a little bit. But
how'd you get in? Was it a lottery kind of a scenario?
I think it was just basically open sign up. Well, I think I had a friend that had gotten in, and he had some kind of link that I got. I was able to kind of sign up
before
the regular public. So that's how I got in. And then it's just, they kept on rolling my entry over from year to year until finally gonna that, go this year.
I've yeah. seen footage of that. I've seen mm-hmm. footage of people just going over there and just riding and everything about it. My wife even looks at me while I'm watching it, and she just goes, "Oh, we could go there." I'm going. I'm thinking this would be hard. It would be, you know, a beautiful version of hell. But my wife's like, "Oh, the villages are cute. I could hang out. I could do all kinds mm-hmm. of stuff while you're coughing up a lung, and then, you know, we have a cute little hotel to come back to." My wife, yeah, she's getting into this kind of thing because she didn't yeah. have to do.
And my
this
wife
shit.
And daughter are going. And I probably send them to like a spa or something.
Oh man,
that's some of the hot. Oh, so you're
all right. going? Yeah. Yeah, we're all going.
So. Oh man, cool. That's cool. That is really cool. So I want to know how the past week went for, well, what's your training like, Brent, but coming into this? I mean, are you doing just super into it, one day off, kind of long ride bulk kind of thing, or?
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely like last like 4 or 5 weeks have really been pretty consistent, building up more miles. Usually get a pretty long road ride on the weekend. Usually try to do on like a Tuesday, usually take Mondays off. All my wife likes to ride, so we go with like an easy ride on the bike path Mondays. Yeah, yeah. Then Tuesdays, usually do like a road ride, maybe with a couple other people, get the hills hard and kind of recover type of thing. 10-minute efforts, that kind sure. of stuff. And usually hit a gravel ride on Wednesdays and kind of just recover a couple of days and then hit it again on the weekends.
Are you going to race or are you going to finish?
You know, a couple years ago, I was probably like all gung ho. I got myself a coach and
yeah.
all that kind of stuff. And then that once COVID hit, I think all ended. So I think, well, a couple years ago, I would have probably tried to go for a better time. And I probably, now it's like, well, that's a great experience. And I'm going to, if I want to stop and take a picture, I'm going to stop
yeah.
and take a picture.
Yeah. 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 yeah.
Like, it's like, I'm not going to just be like looking at my power meter or something, yeah. trying to get around there, you know. It's going to enjoy the scenery, enjoy the yeah. enjoy the experience.
Oh my God. That, cool. that, you know, and you get so many times where I you are staring at those numbers. And I remember we were at Belgian Waffle and there was a guy when we were riding, talking to other people. He knew, he says, "Oh, I'm just going to stare at my screen and I want to keep it at 100 or a specific yeah, watt like number. That, yeah. He said, I was just like going, I have to beat that guy because that guy's yeah. not enjoying the ride. And I didn't. Well, I did enjoy the ride.
Yeah,
we'll get into that sort here of. In a minute. People oh, who yeah, say yeah. they don't enjoy the ride, and that's just, I'm talking to you, Waples. Paul, let's go to you. How was your last week riding?
Well, I thought I was going to have today and yesterday off. I did have yesterday off, but work called on today.
Did people give you shit on Strava when you ride on days that you're supposed to be working? Because I rode today and people gave me endless amounts of shit.
No, I don't. Yeah. I've got
to get to work. I'm like, fuck.
Yeah, I'm school teacher. Yeah. I don't work. Yeah.
Shows at 6.
No, I got a couple response riding with Brent because there was a KOM involved.
Okay.
But one of them was a guy graduated from the same school I did 2 years ahead, Ted Middlestadt. Remember?
Yeah,
him?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Ted grew up at Reardon and he was a fantastic, I think he had a state record in the 1 mile, 2 mile mm-hmm. when he's, and I sold him a Pook frame, was mine. I used at one point in time and I sold it to him. He's a good rider, great guy and everything. So I didn't know you guys were teammates until he.
Yeah, we're teammates and actually, maybe 5 years ago, I was going over to Seattle and he actually didn't borrow one of his bikes, so that was pretty cool.
Yeah, oh, wow. Yeah, he's a great guy. So yeah, I had like 50 miles with you, and it was pretty fun because once we hit, I said Brent, I don't know where this segment starts, so I'll let you lead out. And he says okay, and then all of a sudden it's just I could see this big guy just boom, diesel power, we're both mashers, and it's like, oh fuck, this is so much fun. We were flying, it's about a 2.5 mile
yeah
segment, and it was you know, brought you back, started waxing sentimental about the whole yeah, it was great.
I think we had a nice tailwind too.
Yeah, we did. A tailwind slightly downhill.
Oh wow.
And averaged what, 34 something miles an hour?
Like 34.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
2.5 miles. So,
and you got
yeah.
it.
Yeah, and I coasted probably about...
Yeah, I think you got by like a good five seconds or more.
Yeah.
And we coasted like the last... Because we weren't sure where it ended. So.
Yeah,
we
just I want to get a segment. I want to get a KOM before
I die.
We've
been close.
Before I die.
Oh, in yeah, fact, there's one a time, lot of the three close. Of us and there's a lot CP, of close. When we were down in Tico or Oaksdale.
Oh, yeah.
Remember? And the only guy ahead of us was Logan Owen or Owen Logan or whatever.
Yeah. 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 What? What? Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So wow. It can happen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. I'm never going
to. But we got to have somebody that like says, hey, there's a segment like
yeah.
Brent around.
Yeah. That's
if
true.
If it makes you feel any better, I don't have one.
You don't? Well, you can get them though. You've well, got you an open too. Horizon ahead of you. I've got a very short room. It's just gosh. Like I'm walking towards the door and I'm about to close it behind me. It's like never again. I honestly climbed Valley Chapel last year and I went, that's probably the fastest I'm ever going to climb it. Is that depressing?
Yep.
You also, speaking of, rode yeah. with...
CP.
What?
Yeah. So here's the thing. This is like a great
you
weekend for me.
CP.
Because I get to ride with an old friend. An old teammate.
Yeah.
And we get a KOM, and then I'm riding with CP yesterday, or no, wait, Sunday. And that was the longest ride he's done in a year.
Fans of the show will know CP. Yeah. He kind of pops in and out here and there. There were times where he'd sit at the end of the bar and just like, I just want to sit here and have a beer and listen to you guys do the show. And there were times where I'm like, I need you to talk. And he's like, shaking his head. No, I can't talk. I can't talk. I can't talk. The bots are going to track me and they're going to find me. And then and the next thing I know, the government's going to be... black helicopters. No, but I'm giving CP shit because he says he doesn't listen to the show anymore because it depresses
he's
him.
Back on because he's riding his bike.
That's great.
Yeah, you know, it was hard when he wasn't riding his bike to hear or talk or read about cycling because it was so distant.
Well, if you're listening right now, CP, the seat at the end of the bar is always yours, man. You there always you have a seat here. Yeah, he's just a classic guy.
And we finished the ride at Benedito's and grabbed a Belgian beer.
Nice.
Just chatted afterwards.
So. Nice.
Yeah, it was a good weekend. And so, it was free other than the beer.
Oh, okay.
So that was like $16 with the two beers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's get to it then, you asshole.
That was my segue.
Yeah, that was perfect because Jackson and I finished the Chafe Grand Fondo, which I found out is not like the word chafe, like, oh, my thighs are chafed. It actually is an acronym. Is that the word I'm looking for?
Yeah.
For something for education, I guess, is the last two parts of it. So it's like it's a charity, man. So, you know, take your expensive stuff and shut up your ass. Because we finished it. We did the 100 miler and we finished.
We more than finished. We won.
We got first and second, which I want to get into a little bit on this here about the whole first and second here as we get going here. But this is Father's Day weekend, and I'm not going to cry throughout any part of this podcast because I did enough of that already. But let's put a little perspective on this event. As I've said many times, is a fondo, okay? Fun ride, the Grand Fondo, the big ride, you know, and it's kind of, it's fun. Fun does not have a part of Fondo, but the big ride is what it is. And so we've talked about this regularly on the show, and Fondos can be races issue. Yeah, okay, I got nods from around the room. So Jackson, we decided to race this thing, right?
We did.
Okay, so tell me about your day, particularly going into this, and how you felt, and surprises in the course and things like that.
Yeah, it was going into it. I had the idea of, I mean, hell, I want to win the thing. Or I want to get like, I want us to get close to it. You know,
drag my dad's ass across the front line.
Well, I wanted us to be at the front, whether it be 10th, whether it be first and second, who knows? And then when we originally set out, I wasn't sure if our mentalities, you know, if they were equal on that part of it all. But right as we rode out, I mean, it was three of us. So that was pretty, I mean, automatically that was.
The
that
asshole
made it
was there, Paul.
Not
the asshole, but just the like, I'm leading out of here first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the competition was
there. Yeah,
which is good. And then, yeah, throughout the day, it was, we just stuck it, or at least for me, I just stuck it really steady. I really had to make sure that I stayed up on eating and drinking. That was the toughest part for me, I think, because I knew that if I did every hour, it wouldn't be enough. And so I did about every 45 to 30 minutes. And after a while, around mile 60, I started to feel some stomach issues. And I, the entire time was like, it's going to suck to eat, but you got to do it. And mm-hmm. so, every time I'd take a pull at the front and then I'd come to the back and I'd say, if I'm not eating now, next time it's going to suck, but you got to do it. Mm-hmm. And so I just shoved as much untapped and scratch as I could. Yep. And then, yeah, you know, I don't know if you want me to get into that finale portion yet.
Well, the thing about it for the, you know, we said we were going to start plugging events on the show, and one of them, this is the third time we have done this event, and this is the first time we've done the 100. And this is North Idaho at its finest. And I know you're probably listening to this wherever you may live and going, wait, North Idaho, fine, good, what, no. It is absolutely some of the most beautiful places mm-hmm. I've ever ridden in my entire life. Yeah. Waterfalls. We had a deer cross the road in front of us. Absolute beautiful greenery, mountains, snow-capped still at this point in time. And absolutely beautiful. And the last times we had done it, there were some kind of not sketchy, but some questionable sections when we were riding on a highway with a pretty narrow shoulder. And sometimes when you're riding these shoulders, you are in North Idaho and you're gonna have somebody with a gigantic Dodge mm-hmm. who doesn't want to give you much leeway, and the chafe people have taken that into account and they changed the course, which I didn't know going in, and mm-hmm. they did some alternative routes that kind of take you around different areas, and it got even better. And it was great. And we should mention that we had two teammates in the 150 mile distance.
We did.
The Flying Waples brothers, who also took first and second in the 150. And Sam isn't here, so we can speculate a little bit about the insanity that is Sam Waples. He fits you to your bike great, but he went into this mentality with this, I'm going from couch to 150 mm-hmm. and so, you know, I'll get to that in a second, but our strategy, my brain always immediately tries to belittle it. Well, it wasn't as big of a crowd as it was before COVID, or there were, you know, the strong guys were blah 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 blah, 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 you know, because I want to find a way to make my happiness go away.
You're not comfortable with it.
Yeah, I am.
We were the strong guys.
I don't like joy. So I'm a bike rider.
That's why you have a podcast.
Yeah. 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 And so we rolled out, and out of nowhere we had this guy who was with us who mm-hmm. looked at us and went, well, I guess it's just four of us now. And about 5 miles later it was three of us. Yep. And we all just kept rotating through. I mean, taking pretty substantial pulls the entire way. And we got to this point where... actually, let me ask you, Jackson.
Okay.
Tell me about conquering that distance demon. Was it the fueling thing, or did you have something in the back of your mind? Because we've done some long distance events before where you've kind of gone... you've had a hard time towards the tail end. We've had Belgian Waffle where you left me behind and then I caught up to you. I'm not, you know, bragging.
No.
You know, I just want to make myself look like shit. But this was the first time that you finished an event absolutely flying. Did you mm-hmm. were there any moments where you were like, I'm not going to be able to keep going, or?
No, the whole time it was just, I this year's been a different year. I think every time that I've entered a competition, it's just been I've been really locked in competitively. And so this entire time it was like I had the mentality for it. I knew how I needed to eat, and I think training, and you know how every cyclist talks about how training, age, genetics, they all at one yeah. point in your life really like come to a peak. I'm not saying this is my peak, but like I'm definitely,
it's a short room, Jackson. Yeah. You're going to hit the door here soon.
I know, yeah, but I'm definitely starting to feel like all that stuff's, you know, kind of coming together. So it's just a culmination of different things, you know.
We got to this point before I get, we're going to get over this here shortly, but we got to this one point where the three of us were doing really well together. And then we got to this long, steady, gradual climb. And, And the guy who was with us, super nice guy, honest as hell, he went, what did he say? Something,
oh, he goes, man, I don't think I can go any faster on these climbs anymore.
Jackson just...
Don't
okay
say that.
Yeah. Yeah, he immediately went to the front of our little trio and just set a tempo down. And the next thing I knew, all I was doing, I mean, it was tunnel vision. I was just staring at his hub, just focusing on it. And you said to me, like,
oh, I went, you tell me, faster or slower? That's all I said. And your response was, there was all it
Mama.
Was. It was
really close.
Yeah.
Really close.
It was two words. Can't talk. That's all it was. The entire time.
I was so redlined. I was just staring at it, just going, if he goes any faster, I'm fucking popped. And I know that I'm going to be the kind of guy who's going to say, Jackson, just go ahead. Just take the victory, man. Just go. I'm good. But he was like, no, fucker. Mm-hmm. You're staying on here. And he catered his dad home. And yes, we finished together. I pushed him ahead of me. But the timer, I think, was feeling sorry for the old guy and put me first on the roster. So a big thanks to the organizers at the Chafe for the event. And I do want to ask really quickly, do we all have somebody like Sam Waples in our friendship circles who is just this guy who's like going, I'm just going to go out and hurt myself. It's this masochism that is just beyond safe.
Safe?
He went from like, I've done some rides to I'm doing 150 miles. I know he had some whiskeys the night before, and I know he got up at 3 o'clock in the morning and drove out there, and he still went out there and averaged like 20.5 miles an hour
for
150 miles.
Yeah.
Is he insane, stubborn, stupid, or strong?
All.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay. I just wanted to know. So, Paul, we're going to get to the point you wanted to talk about, and this is our first kind of topic here. Entry fee of $125. That is with, and Brent, I know you can probably speculate on some of the entry fees you're dealing with, forbid flight to places where you're going. The event was $125. That was with a $50 minimum of fundraising. So it was $75, and they asked you to raise $50. What makes an entry fee a proper value? What makes an entry fee a proper value in your minds? You know, is that what makes it too much? What makes it too cheap? What makes it just right? You know, I don't know what it's going to cost you to go to something like this that you're going to here in a couple of weeks. It's got to be pretty damn spendy. What makes it worth it?
I think for that particular thing, it's just the whole experience is like basically a vacation. So
okay,
you're willing to spend a little bit more money. And it's like a once in a lifetime type of situation. But I think for the average kind of like Fondo ride, I think it just kind of depends a little bit about, are you supporting a good cause? I know we have a ride that our local kind of junior cycling organization puts on, and it's a fundraiser type of thing, and it's you have to raise a certain amount of money. So if you sign up, sure, and then you don't raise the money, they just take it out. You have to put your credit card in, they just take it out. So
that's what we did.
But you feel like you're supporting a good cause when you do it, I guess. And other than that, I mean, other rides, you know, if they have really good food afterwards and a good party afterwards,
sure,
you know, it's a better kind of whole situation like that. Man, you feel like you at least got some, your money's worth out of it a little bit more.
We got a pint glass. We got a shirt. We got these swag microfiber towels, which I took 5 because they're so freaking awesome. I think you're supposed to take 1. I took 5.
Well, you won.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
That's
come on.
Victory.
That's how you wrap.
There were food stops with, you know, kind bars with, you know, drinks, which with fruit,
Costco,
and stuff like that.
Muffins.
Yeah. Yeah. And, what am I missing? Am I missing anything?
No.
We got a bus ride to our part because we didn't do the 150, so they bus ride you out to the you know, that first 50 miles. Mm-hmm. And you know, yeah, that's a lot of money for that experience. There was a taco bar afterwards, which I didn't eat, but there was free beer afterwards, which I did.
What kind of beer?
There were like three different choices. You know, it wasn't just all IPA, Paul.
So, well, I was thinking, you know, Bud Light.
No, no, oh my God. So.
What is North Idaho?
So I'm blending that into this. It is, yeah. Colorado Kool-Aid. I'm taking a topic from David Sanley, a friend of mine at the Feed Zone podcast over at Cycling Legends. He talked about a recent Fondo in Michigan that included the district road race. They basically ran the road race categories ahead of the Fondo riders, which sounds a shit ton like gravel to me.
When there's gravel, he said there's gravel in that race too.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't even remember that when I was on the show.
There was some sections of gravel in that state.
Yeah. So here we've got, in essence, a course, you know, and not enclosed, because the Fondos we ride, you stop at red lights, you know, although we dodged a couple of them and things like that. But you know, a four-way stop, you're expected to at least rolling stop and slow down. A road race, you bomb through that shit. I don't know what this event did, but I'd love your guys' thoughts on the possible method of creating more road races that tie into this Fondo concept, where, now mind you, the entrants did have to pay to ride the Fondo, which means they paid for food stops, even though they're not going to use them. And they also had to pay a USACC fee on top of that. So
the Fondo riders?
No, the racers. The racers. Okay. So they had to pay for the Fondo, and they had to pay an extra fee for USA Cycling. Mm-hmm. So it's going to make it, you know, a little bit more expensive. So I'd love to know if you guys had any thoughts upon this format and maybe the potential of the fact that we could see more races this way. We could see some more genuine road races this way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It gives the possibility of more spectators, I feel like. Also maybe more, cause I feel like road racing, when you show up to a road race, it's just kind of like, oh, you know, this is a pretty dull infield nothing left. But I feel like this kind of can create a bit of a different atmosphere when it comes to road racing. Also, I think it's really fun because it gives riders an opportunity to race like whatever the state road race course and really see what like the Cat 1-2 pros are doing.
Yeah.
So I think that is kind of fun. It kind of gives them the opportunity, like when they ride the Paris-Roubaix course, you get to see what the racers do. Obviously at a different level, but I think it's kind of fun. And if it gives us the opportunity to have like to more road racing, I would take it. I have no complaints about it.
Do you see any flaws in this design?
Well, I like the idea when I heard, cause I listened to that podcast and I like the idea. I think a lot of people it will bring more people and get more interest maybe into actual racing. Mm-hmm. And like Jackson says, you can compare your time to those of the Pro 1-2s or whatever. Or, you know, even as a Cat 3, you're looking at this guy like a Grand Fondo guy beat me. I need to train more. I mean, there's a lot of levels on that I like. Logistically and how to develop a course that you could do all that.
A Fondo and a race.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because unless you had like a rolling, I'd be curious, do they have a rolling enclosure for the races and then just let the Grand Fondo do their stop signs, jumping red lights and stuff?
Yeah.
But I love the idea. We've got to think of something. I would never poo-poo any novel idea.
Because sometimes there's not enough people to actually do the race
to marshal it.
To raise enough money to actually put on a race, to get the number of police and traffic control and stuff. So you get the Fondo behind you with all the entry fees for that, then you can kind of afford to actually put on the traffic control and stuff needed for the racers. Back on the East Coast, you have the New York City Grand Fondo.
Yeah.
And that's a very steep entry fee. A number of my friends have done it. I don't really have a desire to do it, but
what is the cost?
So that is like probably like a couple, like by $250 or something like that, at least maybe $300. But you know, you start on the George Washington Bridge, they close that down, you know, and at least one of the decks of it, and there's, you know, all the intersections are police controlled, and they have actually a big, you know, pretty big payout for the winner for so it is basically like a road race at the front.
Yeah.
And you know, so
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
So there's those types of races that
I seriously think the badge of Fondo is almost minimizing what it truly is, because I keep thinking of this gravel font, this gravel format, where it is a gravel race. The pros start, you can ride with them as long as you can hang with them. It's a race. Fondo has this mentality of this food stop cookies fun, but they offer prize money. There is this concept where it is a true, in essence, race. I'm struggling with Fondo's being a race, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
And they actually do drug testing, I think, at that one.
Really? At New York, yeah. People got busted. Yeah.
One of our ex-pros who rode for one of the Spanish teams for a long time. He was one of Chris Horner's teammates a long time, who got nailed at a Fondo, too.
I think so.
I can't remember who it was. Mm-hmm. Yeah, somebody will probably chime in about an hour behind the delay. Yeah.
What I will say, though, is it's like, I get what you're saying with the whole Grand Fondo thing, but I also wonder if nowadays I feel like that's changing a little bit. Like, you can race anything that multiple people with a bicycle line up at
the
same time.
Which is
the
true essence of racing.
Yeah. And I think that if the name is going to, like, decide the competitive nature of it, then it's like, why? I guess I don't understand that, just because it's like, you can race what, I mean, like we did this last weekend, you can race whatever you want to race, mm-hmm. as long as it is, like I said, as long as it's just a bunch of people lining up at the same time, it can be a race if you want it to be.
Well, that's the same with the TNT that we have, Throwdown mm-hmm. Thursdays, and the breakfast ride back in the day. I mean, it really was full-blown race, and we left Spokane going to Cheney with people with, like, you know, panniers and stuff, and then we just took off. I mean, that's always been the case. Mm-hmm. It's, to me, it's like, what's the price? I mean, what am I... Would $125 that you guys paid, was that really worth, you know, 100 miles?
Are you willing to do that?
Yeah. Exactly. And even for races, like even balking at going down and doing a 35-minute crit in Vancouver, Washington, which is a six-hour drive, you know, the gas, the price of the gas, place to stay, mm-hmm. And then hitting Portland for another criterium for another 40-minute grit. I mean, you got to justify the cost nowadays. You
fuck,
know?
You're old.
I get. I know. Well, there's other things. I got grandkids.
Well, I guess we also
there it is.
I guess we also talk about, when we talk about entry fees, we also, I feel like, kind of go against what we're saying with, we got to support the racing.
Yeah.
That's why I didn't have an issue with this last weekend. Spending the money, I mean, if it keeps a thing that is a bicycle event going on, then I'll support it. They did a really good job, and it was worth the money and time for me, you know.
Plus, I think a key to bike racing is what we did this weekend, and Brent, what you're doing in Iceland, is we made a weekend out of it. My wife found a Airbnb in town, a little condo in town. We rented that. We went to dinner both nights. We had great food. We had a great time. While you and I were riding, my wife and your fiance had a great time just screwing around in town and having a really good day. And that's, I think, these destination areas, these places, these events, a way to make it more of that weekend thing. Like you're saying, Paul, I mean, if there was a reason for you to go over to Vancouver and there was stuff going on, festival, and all kinds of stuff and stuff and things like that, where all of a sudden it's a family-based something going on, a crit should be a... Yeah. There are ways to make those. I mean, if we go to Tulsa Tough, that's a gigantic party, you know. Exactly. And so I think there's ways to make that happen. I'm wondering what USAC is going to do with this, and if they're going to start get their claws into Fondos and suddenly start to make this an insurance-based thing, and then they're going to fuck it up. I'm seriously concerned about it.
They do have kind of a Grand Fondo World Series.
Yes,
and
they do.
Yeah.
I know there's been a couple guys, at least out in Connecticut, that I've ridden with that have done the there's a couple of qualifiers. I think the New Jersey Grand Fondo is one, and they've won they've gone over to like France to do the world championships and worn the USA kit and all that kind of stuff. So
really USA national Fondo team.
Yeah.
Wow. I like it.
I did Coeur d'Alene. There was an Italian, Sal Italia had a Grand Fondo team that was, was there.
I remember that because I remember I had to bring two different national anthems, the Italian national anthem and the American national, U.S. I don't understand why I had to play the national anthem for him.
Well, he won.
But anyway, he did.
Yeah.
He did. Mm-hmm. I didn't get an interview with him. Leaning into that, and I want to get you, I haven't told you guys I'm going to do this to you. We asked you, the listeners, we asked you guys a few weeks back to send us information on your event or an event that you might know about that could use a plug. And so we have our first to promote.
Nice.
And this was sent to me, and I want to know, and you know what? They're sending it to us. We can be honest, but, here we go. It's called the Soul Survivor. Taking place September 17th and 18th, and I apologize if I screw up the name because I live on the West Coast, Camp Susquehannock in Brackney, Pennsylvania. So here's the format from their website. You ready for this? So you, and I quote, you choose a discipline between mountain biking, trail running, or gravel grinding, which means we've lost Paul already. But I'm going to put Paul into a perspective that I want you to think that if there was a road option too. Mm-hmm. You or your team will compete in the discipline for the entire event. So trail runners will only do a trail run. Each discipline will have its own separate course. At the start of each hour, the participants will line up in the starting corral and they have 1 hour to complete a lap. If the participant finishes early, they can eat, rest, sing songs, basically do whatever they want while they wait for the next lap to start at the beginning of the next hour. Participants cannot start the next lap early. All must start each lap together. If they fail to finish the lap within the allotted time, they and their team are out of the event. After the 12th hour lap, the time to complete a lap will be reduced by 5 minutes for each reoccurring lap. So, for example, 13th, 55 minutes, 14th, 50 minutes, and so on. The event will continue until there is a sole survivor in each category. If there are multiple participants starting a lap and none of the participants finish within the allotted time, the competitors will be ranked by their time to finish the final lap. So, my questions are, thoughts about something like this? And if there was a road option, or if there was just bikes, if it was road bikes, mountain bikes, gravel bikes, the best to rule them all or something like that. Thoughts on this event?
I think it's a fun idea. I really like that idea. It reminds me a lot of that Last Man Standing fixed gear race that they do. It's just where it's just lap to lap to lap, whoever's last gets pulled.
Missing out on the track.
So it reminds me a lot of that. But I think it's cool. I could imagine it takes a long time to separate those final competitors.
Yeah, you're talking 14 hours minimum.
Mm. Yeah.
That's a long race.
Yeah. And then, I could imagine like after a while, they're just neck and neck until one decisive moment. It's a fun time, but that's a long, long day.
Paul's just like, fuck, well, what's your next topic, Pat?
Well, yeah. No, I like the idea, and I encourage anything like that. It on a personal level, it doesn't appeal to me. I'm, obviously just kind of
curmudgeon-y.
Yeah, curmudgeon-y. There's one thing I like to do, and it's just racing bikes. And so, you know, but I...
Could you get in if there was a road option?
I would have to take a crew like this in here to say, hey, come do this.
And we'd have to blackmail
you. I wouldn't be the leader. Dudes, let's go do this.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be that person. That's just not... But I would do it for a group of guys. And I think you would have tons of fun. I mean, I'm not going to throw shade on it.
No,
exactly. I would have fun doing it. But, I'm just monogamous on the bike racing thing, I think. So, yeah.
Brent, got any thoughts?
It sounds fun. I'm kind of in Paul's camp.
Are you?
I
mean, okay.
I don't know that I would be doing that, especially with trail running involved. But
yeah.
Well, you pick one. Oh, you pick a discipline. Okay. So you pick, let's say you're going to do just gravel. Your team is just gravel the whole time. Or you individually are just gravel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It'd be a fun weekend with your friends, I guess.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I keep thinking of it as a couple options. Number one is, especially after promoting the 24-hour race, is it becomes this festival. You have trail runners, you have mountain bikers, you have gravel riders, all in one place. It becomes a huge party, which is what we want to do. Mm-hmm. Second of all, it provides you an opportunity. So let's say the race starts on Saturday morning. Maybe you do crits on Friday night or something like that. Because I remember specifically, like, for example, when I was in charge, was helping with the Coeur d'Alene Fondo, they had all the permits and everything in line, and they did a downtown Twilight Crit the night before. Because everybody's there, we got all the signage, we got all the timing equipment, let's do it. And so I'm thinking there are so many ways to start incorporating different tiers of bike racing to these mass start events, which are never going away. Mass start events are what we need more of. They're going to provide us an inlet into the sport, and they're going to make communities more excited about seeing bike races.
Well, I'm all for that kind of what you talked about, the Coeur d'Alene Grand Fondo. Mm-hmm. After our first recent downtown Criterium, some of the chat was, because we're doing it in September, that's the transition to crit. I mean, not crit, excuse me, cyclocross. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so we would do the Twilight Crit on Saturday and Sunday, have a cyclocross at Riverfront Park.
Oh, wow.
And that, so, you know, and that's, oh, that, my, you know, God. You're looking at Memorial Day weekend type situation. Wow. But you can't do it in Spokane on Memorial Day weekend because of pig out in the park.
Unless you did it at a different park.
Yeah. That, you know, it could be Manitou. It could be, you know, and I think those ideas are hanging there, and I think they would be successful. But when it comes to bike racing, it's a slow process.
It is.
You have to just relax and not think it's going to go gangbusters.
Do you blame that on people willing to pull the trigger and make the race happen? Or do you blame that on...
I think
bike racers, we all just want to race. Yeah. We don't want to put on events.
Exactly. Yeah. And I am extremely guilty of that.
So am I. Extremely guilty.
And the thing is I think, too, is the permitting part and getting closures, and you're having to deal... I mean, the city has to deal with people like, you know, I can't even get out of my driveway because of the stupid, you know.
I need to pick up a newspaper and cigarettes.
But somehow Spokane has the ability to do it. We have the largest timed race, Bloomsday. Yeah. And next weekend we have Hoop Fest, the largest 3-on-3 basketball tournament in the town. So if there's any city that can do it, and we had the largest Pro-Am race back and Olympic trials back in the 80s here in Spokane, so... You know, I think this is the environment, but
I'm just kind of keep coming up with ideas to reinvent the wheel. Reinvent the wheel. All right. Thanks, you guys. Let's get to the news. News time.
What are you going to see after this?
I don't know.
It's all fresh, people. Wait for it.
Actually, it just came to me.
Wait for it.
My beer's empty.
What can I get you?
No, I'm fine. I'm probably better at this point in the show that I just stay a little loose-tongued. News brought to us by our friends at Scratch Labs, you guys, who are in the midst of a huge sale. Get to packfiller.com, click the link, and grab fuel for the summer, including the recent raspberry limeade with caffeine, which my wife is stealing from me daily. She's like, oh, I like that stuff you have. And then she's like drinking while at work because she likes it. It's got a little shot and it's good. It's delivered. It's delicious. The return of pineapple is also back, yeah, and yeah, so much so. More. So news headlines, gang. In case you didn't know, there's a big race happening about 10 days from now. It's called the Tour de France. And Jumbo-Visma draws first blood. Rowan Dennis has been left out of the Jumbo-Visma team for the Tour de France, which is headlined by Primoz Roglic, Jonas Vingegaard, Wout van Aert, Sepp Kuss, Stefan Kreiswijk, the hanger himself, and providing the key climbing support for Roglic and Vingegaard, with Thijs Benoot, Nathan van Hooijdonk, and Christophe Laporte completing the roster. While Roglic and Vingegaard lead, I'm going to ask about that, the Jumbo-Visma General Classification Challenge, Van Aert has the freedom to pursue the green jersey after he claimed 3 stage wins on last year's tour. The Jumbo-Visma squad has been constructed with those separate goals in mind. So the team, I think, did I cover all the guys? Did I miss anything? So, gentlemen, thoughts, especially the one missing a specific high maintenance Australian.
I don't think they need him.
Really?
When I saw that, I didn't think they need him. They have
Dennis Rowan is going to be calling you tomorrow.
Well, that's I'll take the call.
What the actual fuck, mate?
The reason why I say I don't think they need him is because they have the Olympic gold medalist in time trialing. They have Wout van Aert, who probably could have won that race as well. And
you sure you need the
professional? Sorry, Jay.
No, you're good. But it seems like for domestiques, it seems like they have it covered. Yeah. Kreuzweig for the mountains, along with Sepp Kuss, and whether one becomes domestique for the other, Vingegaard or Roglic, you know, it seems like they have all their bases covered. And I think to add a big personality, which I think has been kind of squashed over his Ineos and Jumbo-Visma years, could add another level of difficulty that they just don't need to deal with. They got to focus on winning a tour for the first time. And I think they want to go all guns a-blazing for winning the jerseys this year. So I think that no distractions, go with the best no-drama riders that they have. And I think they have also brought the best writers that they have. So
I should mention that Dennis does have some intestinal issues. He's dealing with some virus issues, the stuff that's been going on. So things like that. Anybody else I'll even throw this in. Can a team, you look at this team on paper, this is an unbelievable team. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about the strength of this team on top of your just initial thoughts. Even before we know what UAE is bringing, can a team like this be unstoppable? Why or why not? And what does it take to beat one person who we all probably agree has the greatest chance to compete, to do it again? Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it could be the situation of too many kind of leaders on the team.
Yeah.
That if Wout is going for all these stage wins and then, you know, with the Vingegaard and Roglic, you know, if they can't, if something happens to one of them, or if it goes pretty far into the race where one of them is not really the all-out leader.
Yeah. Or if one of them hits the deck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hi, Primoz. He has a tough time keeping the rubber side down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where if the other teams are just going all in for one guy, it could be an advantage.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And that's what Jumbo-Visma did last year. And they finished with, what, 4? And that you can see the struggle that they had at... if you watched that video, I told you guys to watch.
I did.
Yeah. It's pretty good, wasn't it?
I really liked it, yeah.
I don't think I did my homework.
Too busy watching, Bachelor or something?
No, I'm watching yard design videos tonight with my wife. Because if you've seen my backyard, it honestly looks like a really abandoned, vacant lot.
How long is... you've not scooped up Bender's poo.
It has none. I can't find Bender's poo. And I can't find Bender.
Yeah.
The grass is that tall. I'm just not joking.
Going,
I wish I was joking. I wish I was joking. It's not that. It's horrible. But anyway.
So I think going in with 2 liters, I mean, you look what Vanguard was like. He really came to a certain level, and Mont Ventoux, that's where he dropped Pogačar.
Mm-hmm.
And so you look at that and you think, well, you've got one guy who is like solid on stage races other than the Tour, and you want him to win, but you got to have a backup plan.
Mm-hmm.
A plan B.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one guy that can do it, and mm-hmm. you know, I think they kind of showed their intentions during the Dauphiné.
Yeah,
without a doubt. You know, Wout was nailing all what he could, and he put in when he could. Yeah. And then, you know, pulled the cord when he had to, going up the hills to save his energy for the next day. And I think that's mm-hmm. their plan.
Do you think those egos are going to stay at bay when it's something as gigantic as the Tour?
Do you think those what are going to stay
the at bay? Egos.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Because you look at, to me, like one of the things I wanted to point out was Roglic, when he lost the first time to Pogačar, and he went over and every time he loses or he mm-hmm. congratulates, mm-hmm. he's a humble, yeah. humble person.
Yeah, he's a humble guy.
And when he goes down. That's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. So I don't think he had, the ego's not there. Vanguard, I don't know. I think he's young enough. He's already said, I can win the Tour,
mm-hmm.
you know, but I think.
That's the one I'm worried about.
Well, I think he can pull back the reins a little bit. He might be a little Chris Froome, Wiggins type situation at some point.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I mean, the only thing is like, he is really, Vanguard is stronger, but he kind of defers to Roglic, and then they don't win. Then that's
yeah. That could be an that's issue. Where yeah. you've got the next Le Mans, you know, yeah. kind of a thing mm-hmm. like that.
I could also see someday Vingegaard jumping ship to like to an Ineos almost.
Yeah,
just because then they could find that full soul leader.
Well, it's funny you should mention that because that takes me perfectly. Thank you to my next story.
Anytime.
Richard Carapaz being rumored to be jumping ship to EF Easy Post. Mm-hmm. Rumor mill still running, but this is the prime headline. Thoughts about this move? Is this a rider racing for a paycheck and a nice retirement? Is this you know, Ineos to Education First? No offense to either team, but it sounds kind of like moving from the Yankees to the Mariners. If you're an American baseball fan, it's like moving, you know, from the biggest budgets, the everything, marginal gains across the board to shit. A stage would be cool.
Well, I'm starting to notice that. I think Carapaz, first of all, I think he wants that sole leadership on a team. Ineos, he doesn't get it.
Had led the Giro though.
I wonder if Ineos is planning for the future. At least that's what I'm seeing a lot of. They're buying a lot of young, and I don't know if Carapaz is necessarily that anymore.
Yeah.
And if he moves to EF, I mean, they do have a pretty strong team. Nielsen Palace is riding mm-hmm. very, very well. I mean, Rigoberto Urán could probably be a pretty damn good. Domestique in the high mountains. I mean, it. When wow. you really, when
good,
you,
good luck telling Rigo that. But no, I agree. Yeah. I agree with you. If it came to that kind of a situation, what a great 1-2 punch.
Gosh, yeah, and it's that South American kind of draw that I think mm-hmm. also brings him to that.
They have a good environment for a lot of South American riders on that team for sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have to agree that if you look at. EF, they're notorious for having a lot of, you know, South Americans,
mm-hmm.
mainly Colombians and stuff, and they have that culture and everything kind of going there, mixed in with Americans. But Ineos, I think you can see, like Jackson brought up, their focus on classic riders, and then mm-hmm. they're picking up riders that are British to do the next British. You can see that youth is, that's what they're after. Their style is more the train power, you know, plan, you know, you're running, we'll just have a train going up the mountain at, you know, 400 watts and you pull off. And South Americans don't do that. They're just random. It's like, things are getting slow, I'm going to hammer it.
Bam.
And you look at Carapaz, has always raced that way. And Iran, all the Colombians, all the South Americans don't.
So systematically, it could be a really good move.
I think Carapaz was way more successful even before his win in the Giro with Movistar. Yeah. Just his style of riding, and he gets to, you know, not that he's a slouch because he's been on the podium in Grand Tours, but but that's not his style because they don't function like, you know, I'm thinking Brent and I just hammering out this even pace at whatever wattage we can handle.
Mm-hmm.
That's not how they do. They just mm-hmm. punch, max, recover, bang, bang, yeah. bang, and draw people out that way. So
it could be a good move.
It's yeah, not, I think it's so. Not I think for Carapaz.
It's not a, hey, mm-hmm. I'm getting long in the tooth trying to move to Trek yeah. Segafredo. No.
Well, he is getting long in the tooth.
He is. Yeah.
Well, I think he's 29, I think.
He's yeah. shitty, super young. So let's talk about the pandemic-sized elephant in the room. COVID has not gone away. It stripped the Tour de Suisse clean. Peter Sagan seems to apparently have some evil person pumping yeah. it into his hotel room at night because yeah, there's something going on that the guy's had it now three times.
Yeah.
Or has he just had long COVID symptoms and just had another spike in it? Those types of things. So thoughts on the upcoming tour and the implications COVID could have. I want to remain positive about this kind of stuff, but you know my brain's going, we're fucked. There's not going to be a tour. It's, you know, it's going to be too hot. We've got climate issues going where Tour de Suisse was baking hot. The Tour de France is going to be even hotter. Yeah. The thoughts of shortened stages are flying around. Am I going to have anything to look forward to, you guys? I want you to reassure me here, please.
Well, I think Dan Lloyd said yesterday on the Racing News show that an ASO-sponsored mm-hmm. race, nobody has ever contracted COVID. Was that it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what he said. ASO. Other than it started. Really? It started yeah. at Paris-Nice, after Paris-Nice.
Yeah, after
when
that.
They shut everything down.
Yeah, that we know.
ASO about. Has not had.
Yeah. So I think that's a really good thing. I mean, Paul, didn't you text us one time that you have to be vaccinated if to race in France?
Yeah. That was, yeah.
We
that
were
was
talking about Peter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think that a lot of those precautions will come into play and that'll be mm-hmm. a really good helper. But I also think that I said this last year, it is the biggest race in the entire calendar. They're not going to let this go away. Ultimately, it's going to go on and there will be a lot of precautions and I think it'll be fine. Temperature wise, it's always hot. There's always one day where it's like, God, these riders are so hot. They need extra hydration, stuff like that. And of course it'll be on one of those terrible flat days where nobody wants to be out on the bike, but I think it's all going to go. I think it's all going to happen. I'm just excited to focus on the racing part of it.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah.
Do we
so poo on you?
No. Do we reach any point where the health of the riders is being threatened, especially with COVID? We've got people who are especially going into the Tour de France. You've got the best riders from each organization. They are, specifically chosen for that moment. They are at the highest peak of their form. You are an abstract sneeze away from, a horrible sickness. These guys are so fragile when it comes to this kind of stuff. Yeah. So, I mean, and then the heat and those types of issues going in. I mean, are we concerned about the health of the overall health of the riders? I'm concerned about Peter Sagan that he's had it now three times.
Well, I think
long-term effects.
Yeah, I think the medical field has kind of got a grasp on that, and I mean, it'd be interesting to see how many people have lost. There's a lot of riders I know that have still affected by long-term that mm-hmm. haven't even got back into the game, and it'd be a shame to see that. But I'm not aware of anybody dying. Maybe somebody has died,
yeah.
But their career could be ended on this. That's the unfortunate thing. But pushing it through, but I think we've got the precautions, in my opinion. That people are, that's why they're testing frequently mm-hmm. and that type of thing to prevent something to happen. I mean, bike racing is a race from the time you sign on to do the race, yeah. whether it's COVID or blowing a tire in a corner or being named Richie Port. I mean, you're going to, things could go rotten. Stage 9.
Yeah. Yeah. It's never going to work out.
Yeah.
So I do have to address this one too, and my wife's going to be upset with me if she does listen to the show when I bring up Garrett Thomas. My question is, a true winner or just the last strong man standing? What are your thoughts? You can be cruel if you want, or you can be like
the last strong man
yeah.
standing.
Yeah. So?
Sergio Higuita can't time trial very well. Yeah. So I think that it was just nailed on.
Yeah. He was, I mean, now mind you, before everybody started dropping like flies, he was right up there.
Yeah.
He wasn't number one guy.
I was about to say that.
Yeah. He wasn't? No. Yeah. Was it Pidcock?
No, Pidcock wasn't. Who was their writers that got
Ethan Hayter or something? Was he in it?
No, Hayter wasn't. I can't remember. I think it was a Colombian or something that was
supposed to. Danny Martinez.
Danny Martinez had to pull out.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he was obviously working for him, mm-hmm. whether that's their schedule or whatever. And maybe Ineos is back. He's a backup like Vindegaard, you know, to mm-hmm. whoever they bring. So, I think his potential's there. Mm-hmm. I still do. What, he's 36? You know, that's pretty old, but, you know.
I mean, comparatively to Tadej Pogačar, it's my age.
Yeah. Exactly.
I'm not leaning in any way, shape, or form towards you guys making those final picks because that's obviously next week. But mm-hmm. but because Brent's here. That's my thing. Because Brent's here, we're gonna put him on the spot.
Are you gonna set up another deal for us?
Fantasy,
remember he did a fantasy
thing. Okay.
Now we got him on.
Yeah.
He said he's gonna do it.
Kelfi, you set that up too high, we'll put it out there. But I'm just kind of keeping it generic here. Too, but I'm gonna throw some categories out here at you, and I'm gonna ask you to see what you think. If you can pick names for each category, so for example, podium picks, riders who you think are gonna be on the podium, you can pick. Three or four riders? What do you think?
Probably three.
Three.
Yeah, three.
Yeah.
Okay, so three riders you have to pick that you think are going to be podium ready for the tour. You know, all things. Working out wonderfully. They have rubber side down. Hi, Primoz.
Yeah, I mean, you got to go with Pogačar and I guess I would go with Roglic, probably Vingegaard. If he can keep the rubber side down on the road.
That would be a predictable, a strong choice of a top three.
But as far as like a third place guy, I don't know. I mean, that is I think someone like, is it Vlasov?
Yeah.
I would probably put him as like third place.
Okay. Sprinters, two riders. I'll let you pick two contestants for the green jersey.
That's a tough one. I've heard this is not the best, sprinters Tour de France, but
yeah. Because that's what you got to always take that into account.
I mean, I think you got to put Wout up there for a green jersey.
Yeah.
And we need to see if Vanderpool goes the whole distance this year.
Mm-hmm. He did the Giro.
Those would be my two picks.
Yeah. Okay. A dark horse, somebody who you think is hiding in the background that's going to have some sort of a breakout ride in any shape or form, sprinting, climbing, anything like that.
That's a tough one. the American guy on EF again.
Nelson
Palace.
Palace.
I think he
just finished fourth in the Tour of Swiss. I think he's definitely riding pretty strong. I think he could get a top 10.
That would be brilliant.
Yeah, that'd awesome. Be great.
That would bring a gigantic return of the USA.
I like his choices.
I do too. Yeah. I do too. And I'll open this up to everybody. How about thoughts in terms of? I mean, we haven't seen all the guys like McNulty. What are we going to see from the U.S. in terms of representation? Anybody got any thoughts?
McNulty's going to be working for.
You think he's in?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or even with when you got guys like Hirschi and who just was with Pogačar in Slovenia.
What's his name?
The Polish.
Rafał Majka.
Rafał Majka. Flying.
Yeah.
Where you got a Rochambeau to pick a. Yeah.
Always do paper.
Yeah. Yeah.
Idiot.
You should have done paper. So, I mean, that's. You're talking a deep team there, too. But that's. Yeah. Any other Americans you think is does Sepkus have any chances or is he just going to be?
He's going to be a workhorse.
Blowing the engine up.
Maybe have an opportunity for a stage win, depending on how,
Yeah.
The guys are doing.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Talk to me about the... Nah, I should get into this next week, but I don't want to ruin it for Brent.
But Brent's not here.
But yeah, we have a cobblestone stake.
Hooray.
Oh, yeah.
They just altered that. They softened they it up a little bit.
Oh,
I just read that on the way here.
Probably because Roglic couldn't handle that.
Yeah,
I think a lot of people are like, wait a minute. Yeah. Well, I don't know. Yeah. I think a lot of people are beating the drum like, wait a minute.
Well,
this
could
be a good tour, and if one of them goes out on the cobbles.
That was the one tour Froome missed out on.
Yeah, but he crashed before.
He already crashed once before
at the cobble stage, but he crashed on a roundabout, not in the cobbles.
Oh.
And he crashed like the day before, so he already had a bad rest. So people always use that as an example. I say poo-poo.
I guess I'm one of those people.
Yes, you are.
Poo-poo people.
Yeah.
I am a poo-poo person.
Poo-poo to you with knobs on.
All right. Brent, how far away are you from the big trip?
I guess the ride is July 23rd, I believe.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's coming up.
Dude, I expect a full report.
Yeah.
I expect a full
report.
Lots
of pictures.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course.
Maybe some photos.
Taking pictures.
Paul and Jackson, do you guys have anything on the near future? Or are you just going to all be like, oh, I'm engaged. Oh, I have grandkids.
I do have grandkids.
I don't.
No, you don't.
No, I've decided to ride across the state of Washington.
I'm still working on sweeten up the pot with my wife to justify spending like $500 a weekend for an hour and a half of of a race. But I'm going to visit Jack. That's how I'll have to.
Yeah.
And I'll help him out on his.
You
got to
let me know on that.
Yeah.
Because the week before, I'm doing a 450-mile ride over 4 days to the other side of the state. And if you're in, I have to alter my plans
really
a little bit.
I really want
to
be in. I really want to do this.
Should we get off
the
pot, man?
It's not me at this point. This sounds terrible, but I got to convince my wife. Because
I'm sighing because I understand.
I'm
sighing because I 100% understand, and I've been there.
I took a huge pay cut to be where I'm at, but you know,
on
that's
the show.
The thing. Yeah, that yeah. I'm losing show. Money on this show.
Damn right. Welcome aboard.
Yeah, just becoming a city employee working in the public. It's not doesn't pay well, but I got plenty of time to go do the things I want to do, but I don't have the money to do it right now.
I'm going
to
throw you under the bus, Paul. Before we sign off on the show, do you have any quirky Brent Soderberg stories that we can embarrass him with?
No, I think he shared a couple. We were talking about. You know, the days gone by, but the only one I can think of is that I appreciate other diesels. We were doing Horse Haven. You were on your team. You had moved back to Seattle.
Yeah.
And we got dropped on the first lap. There's a 6 mile climb and I was on Kirk Willett's wheel, which is idiotic because he's
there is
48.
No wheel.
Yeah, I've been in a break with him before. And no drought.
For those who don't know Kirk, he was
5'9"
probably tops, and then he slam his stem down on top of that just to make himself
disappear. And he rode a 59-centimeter frame.
Yeah,
so like the top of my wheel was where his back was.
You were
at
59?
He rode a 49. 49.
Yeah, 59. Yeah. I'm like, that's bigger than mine.
Yeah. So anyway, I remember pulling out of that. Yeah.
Sorry.
I pulled out of that and I was just scrambling, trying to just find a wheel. And all of a sudden, Brent comes by and we had a group of guys and we chase. And you probably don't remember this. And you had to drop down this hill.
Yeah, I remember.
And
I remember
caught at the bottom of the hill, the whole group. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, whew. Well, you know, it's just one more big lap and we'll be okay. And then our guy, Scott McSpadden, said, Paul, there's a 8-man group up front. We need to chase that down. And then you probably got the same report. And so there was you, I, and probably two other guys. Mm-hmm. We just went all the way. And I remember we take that corner going up that hill is about 120, 30-degree corner, and you start climbing. It wasn't a steep climb, but when you...
Yeah, it was just a long...
yeah, grinding. Pretty soon I'm going backwards, and the next thing you know was I had people going, well, Craig Willett, his brother who's like 6'3", said, hey, Paul, you're going the wrong way because everybody's going this way. We're going this way. So, but anyway, just getting behind him, just to wax back, you know, when we started pulling, I just started thinking about that time, and we're doing that segment Mm-hmm. And just seeing his style of riding is like, oh, this is so
awesome. Back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's a little bit knee end when you pedal. Okay. Slightly.
Not Andre Schmiel where way, it's rubbing
but
the
it's
top
nice and
tube.
Tight. It's not like, yeah. And you don't have a wacky wheat knee. And I'm like, I think I remember this, you know, back in the day. So that's the only story I have.
You know what? That is the thing about this board. And I'm going to wax a little sentimental here is the fact that there are always the stories. There are always those moments that you will never forget. And there are the friends and the those experiences along the way. And the fact that I can be on Paul with you and I'm not busting your balls about this. I can be on a ride with you and you will start telling a story that I know I've heard 5 or 6 times, but I'm still 1,000% happy that I get to hear it again, because there are things that I'm going to hear about it that are different from last time, or things that I'm going to comment on that are different from last time. And then that's what, you know, that's what is so memorable about the sport. And, I can't sign off the show without saying the fact that I got to do 100 miles with my son last weekend in a race effort, and I was barely holding on. I was barely holding on, and Jackson, you were shouting at me to keep the shit going and keep going. And it wasn't a condescending. It was a tear-jerking moment, and I finished across the line, and there's no way I was first. But my wife came up to me and she said, "How cool was that?" And I just looked at her and I said, "I'm not crying. You're crying. There's shit in my eyes, you know." And I just wanted to say, I can't even look at you right now. And for those of you who can see my camera, you can see I'm looking down, because it was just those friendships and those moments. And that was and I think I told you in a text, that was a memory bank moment. Mm-hmm. That was something that I will never, ever for the life of me forget. That day, that ride, those people, the guy that we were with who had socks that were really long. And when he did his arrow tuck, he kind of quirked his butt in the air. It was weird and how he did it. And if you're listening to the show, I want to know about why somebody told you to do that, but they're just the personalities and the people you meet along the way are so element and not element excellent, mm-hmm. I guess is a lack of a better word, but so there I gushed. That was such a wonderful moment, and you know, we have those throughout time, so I should shut up and stop talking. So there we go. End of another show. Send us your events, everybody. I will be happy to feature an event on every week's show. Send us through email, through social media, through whatever. You happen to look up the words pack filler, and if it isn't something to do with the lumber industry, chances are it's us. Rate us on iTunes. Subscribe to us via YouTube. Tell a friend, and we will talk to you next week. Brent, thanks for coming all the way here, and just specifically to be on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me back.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.